We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
Welcome back to the Inside Public Accounting podcast, one of the great accounting shows that you can listen to on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. We're taking you behind the numbers, shaping the accounting profession. I'm Rob Brown. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. It's a Q&A episode. I've got my wonderful co-host with me today, Chelsea Summers, Executive Director of Inside Public Accounting. Chelsea, how long have you been in your role?
Yeah, so I have been in my role 11 and a half years now. I've been with Inside Public Accounting, and I have been the Executive Director of IPA since January of 2025.
Well, we're really looking forward to this. Yes, you've been in the game a long time, but you have a wonderful perspective on what is really happening in accounting because you've got the numbers to back it up. You do the research, you've got the facts, you've got the stats, and we're excited about this one, aren't we?
Yeah, I am really excited. We've got a lot of great questions that have come in from leaders and listeners. Some of them are very data-driven, specific to the information that we have in the survey. Some are big picture, but all of them are really focused on where the profession is heading.
Well, you're going to ask me some. I'm going to ask you some. So let's dive right in. Let's kick off with asking you something that we get asked a lot, which is what's happening with employee retention, private equity-backed firms? Because we hear so much about private equity. We hear so much about employees. And what are these PA firms doing compared to others? So let's kick off with that one.
Yeah, this is certainly a topic that sparks interest with our listeners. So turnover at PE-backed firms was 16.9% last year. And if you compare that to 14.1% for non-PE backed, and this is specifically to the IPA 100, those largest firms. So it is slightly higher. I wouldn't say at this point it's dramatically higher or alarming, but one of the interesting pieces is that when you dig into that turnover, the turnover was primarily voluntary at both groups and at the same level. So the employees at these private equity backed firms aren't necessarily running for the exits a lot more, or they're not doing a lot more layoffs. It really looks the same as the non-PE backed firms, but it is slightly higher this year.
But that small gap, it still says a lot. We know that private equity backed firms, they are famous for moving faster. They integrate new systems. They sometimes disrupt the long-held norms of the accounting profession. That can cause friction. It attracts ambitious talent that love that. They want that growth culture. Firms that succeed in the private equity ownership, you've talked about it on this show, Chelsea, they match that financial capital with human capital. They do bring in a lot of smart people in investing in the culture, the communication, as much as the technology and the efficiency. And so what you're saying there is, just to summarize, the ones that treat people like line items are going to see as a big jump, a lot higher. People are going to be moving on.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I've heard something from somebody I was talking to that said when private equity comes in, it's not completely disrupting the culture. It's amplifying the culture. Ooh, so if the culture of the firm prior to that investment was very focused on their staff and that family feel and staff was a priority, then I think that that's going to be amplified and we're not going to see those issues. If the culture prior to the investment was profits focused and high billables and treating individuals as just numbers on a spreadsheet, then I certainly do think we'll see that number jump higher for some firms.
Well, I've got an interview coming up with Rachel Anefsky in next week's episode. I'm going to be interviewing her on transformational leadership, internships and more. She's really excited about that. So let me flip that to you, Chelsea. If you could design something that's going to be super valuable for future CPAs, training course, CPE, these leaders that are coming through, Rachel Anefsky is going to give us the lowdown on this. She loves this educational side of things. But what would you point to as going to really move the dial for bringing these CPAs up to speed?
Say change management. And if you combine that with a focus on a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, we're joking that mindset is something that we're talking about a lot as a strategy. I feel like these same words keep bubbling up, but the profession is evolving so fast that technical skills are not alone, they're not going to be enough. I think this next generation of leaders and staff need to know how to lead the people through the change and not just be drugged by the waves. So they need to be comfortable with ambiguity. They need to be able to communicate clearly, especially when that path forward and what our five-year plan looks like is not fully defined. And they need to also be able to help their teams see opportunities instead of just the threat of the unknown and the ambiguity of the future. I think that's, you know, with regards to AI, new ownership models, or with client expectations that seemingly shift overnight. So I think that change management isn't just, we've got this new course, let's check the box, we added it, we're good to go. It's making sure we're developing resiliency and empathy in our staff. And the firms that succeed are the ones that are gonna take that and really make something with it.
Yeah, that's spot on. Such a great answer. There's a lot in there. It's not just about knowing what to do, but how to lead others through uncertainty. For me, it's storytelling, influence. We've taught many generations of accountants how to say what's happened, but this next generation are going to have to explain why it matters. And whether you're leading people, clients, investors, your ability to communicate a vision, a story to persuade people through the data and bring, just as you do on the show so well, Chelsea, you bring meaning to the data. You're great at that. So bringing clarity to complexity, there's a soundbite. That's what's going to turn a technician into a trusted leader. So on the back of that, then, if you could keep one thing the same, we're talking about change management. Yeah, but if one thing is going to stay the same in accounting, what's that going to be?
I think number one would be the focus on clients.
Don't change that. Keep that there. Yeah.
Keep the clients front of mind, both in the service offerings that we're providing to them, making sure that those are things that they're looking for, but also the firms that are maintaining that client and staff centric culture. There's a sense of partnership and service. There's the ones that no matter how much the profession changes, they're going to continue to thrive.
I'll give you an example of how sometimes accounting firms lose track of their clients. In that, I heard a story recently where an accounting firm invested six figures in a massive technology capital investment. And the major question they was asking themselves was, does it fit with our existing technology? And the question they didn't ask was, what do our clients want? And what technology would our clients prefer? And they chose the wrong one. And the clients were, yeah, it didn't go down well with the clients because they weren't client first. So yeah, that's one thing that should not change. Let's keep the client right in the center of it, because technology changes delivery, but trust, relationships, that's the reason clients stay.
Absolutely. Rob, here's a question for you. You've talked with hundreds of firm leaders. What trends or challenges do you see that are coming up in those conversations again and again?
There won't be any surprises here, I guess, for our audience, Chelsea, but let's call them out. The race for talent. Particularly with the PE-backed firms, we talked earlier that they really want to hire the brightest and the best. I mean, all firms do, but particularly if you're driving growth. So the race for talent, hiring, keeping people, you've got to think how to do that differently in this new world. The next, I would say, is striking a balance between the efficiency and the humanity. So culture, engagement, people, it's still, yes, AI, offshoring, all that's relevant, but it hollows out culture. It strips relationships away. It ruins the bonds between people in firms. So that's an issue as well. That keeps coming up. How do we keep our people together? How do we keep them bound to the narrative, bound to the story, involved in what we're doing, pushing forward with us, all on the same page? Thirdly, I suppose, the leadership handoff. The demographics. Many firms have succession plans on paper, but not in practice. Now, you talk a lot about succession. The next 5 years are going to expose who's really invested in their people. And maybe you've heard the Warren Buffett quote when he talks about bullish investors. He says, you can only tell who's been skinny dipping when the tide goes out. So you're going to be embarrassed when the tide goes out and you've not got a succession plan in place, because in a few years, you're going to get found out. So
absolutely.
So what about this for you, Chelsea? This question's come up a few times from our audience on the back of the private equity stuff that we do talk a lot about, because it dominates the narrative. Can independent firms still thrive without outside capital?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think independent firms are certainly able to thrive without capital or massive scale, but I think it takes that intentionality and discipline to do so. Independence in making that decision doesn't mean you now work in isolation. The firms that are succeeding, they're very clear on who they serve and what they're best at doing. They're not trying to do everything and be everything to every possible client. They're figuring out what their strengths are, and they're really doubling down on those. That might be in a niche, a specific service line, or a regional market where they know they are strong. I think what's really setting apart those firms who choose to be independent and succeed at it is that they have a strategy. They're going to be thoughtful about their pricing. They're selective about their clients. We've talked previously on culling clients and having client acceptance guidelines. I think that's going to be important in the future. And really having a focus on profitability over just pure top line growth. Let's acquire all the firms to become this big behemoth with no culture integration and no insight towards the future. So these firms may not have private equity dollars that fuel their expansion, but they make up for it with their strong leadership, having a succession plan in place, and a culture that's connected to their clients and staff. So independence is, yes, a viable option, but you need to be deliberate.
You get extra brownie points for mentioning the word behemoth in a podcast. But it's a really good reminder. Growth doesn't have to mean giving up independence. And while we're on growth, let me hit you with this one. What separates the firms that in the IPA 500, you give them all the lists and all the rankings and everything else? What helps the firms? Well, what separates the firms in the 500 from those that stay flat year after year? Because a lot of firms are flatlining. A lot of them are even regressing. So what's the difference?
As I just say, you shouldn't just do mergers for mergers' sake. I mean, the quick answer for the firms that grow up the list really fast is mergers.
Yeah.
Most of the big jumps we are seeing are merger driven. But those firms that have the steady organic growth year after year is certainly possible and is a great growth strategy. I mean, jumping 100 points in the rankings, while amazing, again, is that sustainable? Is that something you can do every year? Can you double in size every year? But the I think the firms that are intentional, and again, back to their strategy, that's going to be something that's more sustainable and help them move up every year.
Yeah, I do hear those two words put together a lot, sustainable and growth. If you can maintain it, great, because there's a short-term lift from M&A versus that long-term lift from the discipline and intentionality you're talking about. Maybe leadership clarity we should put in there as well. Who's setting, charting the course? Because the firms that climb fastest, they know where they're going. They've got a definite arc. They're not chasing the revenue for vanity. They're chasing it for strategy. You said the word. So every partner rowing in the same direction, that alignment, that congruency at board level, and everyone coming along for the ride, that alignment is the invisible force behind the data. That's probably the soundbite you would go with, Chelsea, isn't it?
Yes, certainly that would be.
So we've got to hit offshoring. We've talked about private equity a lot. We do get a lot of questions about this. And when we put episodes out on this, it's still a controversial topic. It's been more and more accepted. So thinking operationally, offshoring, nearshoring, Latin America. I spoke to somebody recently who's developing Argentina as a source for labor, capital, people for US CPA firms. So it's more attractive, isn't it, than traditional offshore models? What are we seeing?
We're seeing that Latin American offshoring and nearshoring is certainly starting to gain traction. I think we'll see it become part of the broader offshoring strategy and not a replacement of it. Firms are getting a lot smarter about creating hybrid teams across different time zones that are helping to improve their efficiency and their collaboration. I think smart firms are doubling down on their offshoring strategies. We had 60% of the firms in our survey say they plan to increase their outsourcing programs next year. And in those largest firms, that was 93%. So some of that, stop and bask in that number, 93% of the largest firms plan on increasing their offshoring strategies next year. So some of that growth is certainly going to come from Latin America, along with the traditional places that we're seeing those investments, like India and the Philippines.
I'm seeing that too, particularly internationally. It's less about replacing one model with another and more about expanding the playbook you've already got. And the proximity of and time zone in Latin America, it just makes so much more sense for the US firms to lean into that rather than the India and the Philippines and the traditional ways. I mean, that will continue. Cultural compatibility, that probably plays a part as well. Latin America, North America, similar work rhythms, language proficiency, time zone overlap. That's got to make collaboration more smooth, you would hope. And it's not just about cost, it's about connection and cohesion. We know offshoring's not going away. It's part of the new playbook.
It certainly is. And Rob, since you have a uniquely global view of accounting, being from the UK, is there anything that the US firms can learn from their counterparts across the world?
There is some evidence that Australia and New Zealand are quite entrepreneurial, a little bit further ahead than UK, and the UK are a little bit further ahead than the US. But that depends on what aspects of accounting that you're looking at. What we're generally seeing internationally is there's a stronger culture of storytelling and visibility in other countries, in other markets. So firm leaders are out there, they're visible, they're talking about their people, their purpose, their progress, not just their numbers. They're willing to shine a light on the people. Communication is part of their leadership, not just an afterthought. And US firms could learn from that a little bit. We see leaders leading from the back and not out and proud about it. The profession overseas as well, it's brilliant at the data and the discipline, but a little bit too cautious about showing personality. So they're out there, but being willing to personally brand yourself and reveal a little bit of yourself, be vulnerable. That's all in the mix for accountants everywhere. And those firms that can tell a better story and put their people up front and center as ambassadors of the brand, sharing their story with confidence, could be podcasts, could be panels, it could be social channels, it could be speaking engagements. That's what talent love to see. It builds trust. People trust personal brands more than they trust corporate brands. So that's a big thing that the US people could do a little bit better. And tell a better story, be better ambassadors for accounting and their firms. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, I think that certainly makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I know that sharing your personal voice and putting yourself out there is scary. Being on a podcast, hosting a podcast is scary. But I think what the value that you can bring to not only your firm and your own, you know, your own brand, but really the profession and, you know, reaching people in a place that you're more likely to find them. Those younger staff are more likely to listen to podcasts. And, you know, we may help bring high schoolers that want to go into accounting and want to make a career in public accounting. You know, this might be a great way to reach them. So I think, you know, putting more personality into what we do is a net positive for the profession as a whole. I love that idea.
Personality into the profession. You're so good at those sound bites. And they want to see people like them. And right. What better way than putting yourself out there? So I'm going to hit you with another P, performance, because one of the magical numbers in accounting is profit per partner. Mm-hmm. And your IPA research shows that only a very small percentage of firms hit that magic million in income per partner. What's the magic there? What are those firms doing differently?
So it really comes down to leverage. Some firms are hitting that $1 million mark because they have a higher total net income. They have, you know, bigger books of business, they have strong pricing, they have efficient operations. But for a lot of firms, it's really about how they structure their partnerships. They're building models that have more staff per equity partner. So each partner's time is more focused on that high value leadership, the client strategy and the growth, not the day-to-day work that really should be delegated down. It's really less about cutting costs to get to that number and more about scaling the impact of the leadership. Those most profitable firms are really good at empowering their people to take ownership, and they're creating systems where the firm is not as dependent on one partner. Partners can focus on leading their teams, developing their client relationships, instead of living in the weeds of the day-to-day work. So those firms that treat leverage as a strategy, that's what's going to move the needle on income per partner.
Very nuanced, but it's critical. And that should be music to the ears of many accounting firm partners. I'd also add mindset in there. The top performers seem to run their businesses like businesses, enterprises, not practices. So they measure brand equity, the intangibles, the client lifetime value, the leadership pipeline, the succession, in the same way that they might measure So utilization, they're thinking in maybe in decades, not in billable hours. They're thinking long term. So another question that comes in a lot around leadership development, Chelsea, 1 in 3 partners are set to retire. 10% of partners are at or close to retiring in the next 12 months. It's a crazy stat. How prepared do you feel accounting firms are for the big succession, the big handover?
I think it's mixed. And now I can't get the visual out of my head of all of the people out skinny dipping not prepared.
Yep, we're going to find out.
I think some firms are very prepared for that transition. They have strong pipelines and leadership programs. But I think others are struggling, and unfortunately, they're going to need to look towards acquisitions as a potential solution. I think we're going to continue to see more mergers in the next few years from accounting firms who aren't able to fill their bench internally.
Fits with what I'm hearing too. A lot of firm leaders are anxious about the transition. Many confuse succession with retirement. It's about continuity, grooming people years before they're needed. I love that quote by Doug McKay, who wrote Swim with the Sharks, and he said, dig your well before you're thirsty.
Exactly.
The firms that thrive are going to treat succession as a rolling process, not a one-time event and not a panic event right at the last minute. And that conversation's got to start earlier at manager level, not at partner level. Another thing we get questioned a fair bit on, Chelsea, is culture. We touched on it a little bit. Transparency, particularly. You were very declarative a few weeks back in an episode when you talked about how few firms share their financial and performance data with all of their staff. So a few people have asked, can you just share what's behind that secrecy again?
I can. This is certainly one of my soapbox issues. And, you know, I can't relate because I don't run my organization with secrecy, but I do have conversations with partners and see where some of that's coming from. I think some partners are hesitant to show how well the firm is performing. There's a fear that if the staff see the profits, they're going to immediately say, I need, you know, a raise, I want a bonus. And I think that's really old school thinking that financial information should stay close with the partner group. A lot of that transparency can backfire in those firms. Today's top performers, they want context. They want to understand how the firm is doing and how their work is connecting to the bigger picture at the firm. When all of that financial information stays hidden, then people start to make assumptions and really begin to disengage from the firm. So I really think firms that are sharing even high level views of the performance, they're tending to build more trust and more loyalty. It's creating a sense of ownership for the staff in what they do in their day-to-day job. When employees feel like they're part of something larger, not just working for the firm, but in the firm and as part of the firm, I think the firms that are thinking about succession and retaining those next generation of leaders, transparency is going to be critical. And if staff can't see the upside or understand what partnership really means for them financially, it's hard to inspire them to want to aspire to that.
I'm thinking of a Hollywood quote. It might have been Lily Tomlin. She said, Ione, there's so many people willing to ride the limo with you when you're rich, but they won't take the bus with you when you're poor. Part of bringing your people along with you for the narrative, the story, the vision, is sharing in the good times and sharing in the bad times, but to your point, being completely transparent because it builds trust. Trust drives retention and loyalty. And firms that want to keep talent, they've got to open up the bank details a little bit. You've got to show them that you're building something together. And transparency is not a threat. The way you're speaking about it, it's a retention tool, isn't it?
In an engagement tool, not just retention, but keeping people engaged and making sure that they feel valued and understand, you know, want to contribute to the greater cause.
Yeah. Let's hit the upper echelons, the top 100. It's a very elite group, and you talk about it a lot, and firms talk about it a lot. We've got a question here. It says, will we ever see a true startup firm break into the top 100 again? It's a definite maybe from me. What are your thoughts?
I think we certainly might. I don't know if you include Sorin from this year's top 100. It's technically new, formed by a combination of existing firms. Pure startups breaking into the top 100, that's going to be very rare just because of how high the bar is for the top 100. But it's certainly not impossible. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a few newcomers that we weren't expecting join the top 100 in the next couple of years.
Come in, the water's lovely, we say. The profession still has room for those bold entrants, those niche boutique firms that are going to really shake things up. But what we might see instead are these platform firms that are really tech-enabled and they're built around advisory and data and outsourced finance. They're leapfrogging the traditional old world ways of doing things. They don't like the way firms are ran today, but they're going to compete for the same clients. Let's watch this space. It'll be exciting when the numbers come out next year, Chelsea. We'll see who breaks in, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So looking ahead, we're drawing it to a close here. Keep your questions coming in. Folks, wherever you see our show, we love doing Q&A shows like this. If you had to bet, Chelsea, what metric do you feel is going to define firm success by, let's say, 2030, 5 years' time?
This is a great question and something that's been on my mind a lot lately as we are starting to look at our 2026 survey and beyond and say, where is the profession going? And as the stewards of the data, how do we get that data that the firms need and then report that back to them? One of the top ones that comes to mind is revenue per full-time equivalent or revenue per FTE. I think that's a metric we've looked at for a while, but I think it's going to gain importance. The interpretation of that number is going to start to evolve as we're including offshoring and automation. So it's not just about how much you're making per person. It's about how you're effectively deploying your talent across borders and across different functions. But revenue per FTE is a key metric that we're honing in on right now.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Quick addition to that. The firms that will win are the ones whose people stay longer. They learn faster. They're going to contribute to ideas that are beyond their job descriptions. Productivity, yes, but that purpose we've spoken a lot about on this show that drives performance. And one of the biggest challenges I'm hearing is fatigue. Leaders know that change takes a lot out of you. It's constant, but they're exhausted by the speed of it. So I want to make that note as well. The best firms pace change well. They set some rhythms. They're not reactive. They find ways around busy seasons. They can chart a thin line between transformation and chaos. I've come across a recent phrase, reinvention fatigue. Constant effort that it takes to stay relevant, to stay up to date, to stay where you are, to stay informed in such a fast changing world. Well, we've hit a lot today, Chelsea, haven't we?
We have. And before we wrap up, I want to ask you one more question. So, in your various podcasts, you've interviewed so many accounting firm leaders and influencers that have a lot of different perspectives. So what trends or challenges really keep coming up in those conversations?
The big ones we've hit, but it's a really good question. When you speak to as many people as I do, you start to see the same themes everywhere. But I'm going to hit on a few because I've thought about this question. I knew it was coming up. The first is visibility. It now matters as much as intelligence. So the firms and leaders that are getting ahead are the ones that know how to tell their story, not just do the work. Visibility is part of the mix as a leadership skill, and it's going to transcend AI. It's going to transcend private equity. The people with visibility with a personal brand are going to have a say in things. They're going to drive change better. It's going to be a lot more than a marketing tactic. So visibility is a theme, a trend, if you like. I want to see more of that, more intentionality. The second is velocity. So the pace of change is exposing how slow some firms really are to adapt. I spoke to a very AI savvy accountant just last week, and he said, I am staggered at how irrelevant accountants are becoming so fast. He said, I'm building new things every day in my firm, and I'm not even very technological. And the accountants that are not building and developing, they're just going to be so far behind so fast. So that velocity, that pace of change is going to expose how slow some firms really are. And the best ones are moving fast, they're testing fast, they're failing fast, sure, and they're getting comfortable being slightly uncomfortable. And the third one is voice. The next generation wants a say. They want a seat at the table. They want to affect how firms are evolving. They want a voice. And they want leaders that will listen and give them spaces where their ideas, their voice is going to be heard. And if firms don't make room for that, these people coming through, they're going to leave fast. So across every conversation, it comes back to being visible, staying relevant, staying human in a profession that is changing faster than ever. So that would be my three: visibility, velocity, voice. I'm sure you're proud of the three V's there, Chelsea.
Yes, that's, if you said good soundbite, visibility, velocity, voice. Those three things that you're hearing as you're talking to many firm leaders and influencers.
Well, you are a queen of the show here, so you've got all the answers. So let's leave this last one with you. What's the one piece of advice that you'd give to the next generation of accounting leaders coming through?
I think the next generation really needs to be curious. They need to learn across disciplines, not just within accounting. I think there's a whole lot to be learned in the AI space, in private equity, in really how to lead and how to do change management by looking outside of accounting. As you said, even looking to accounting firms in the UK or Australia or New Zealand that are maybe a little bit more forward looking, but being curious on what others are doing and how they're succeeding and where they've failed. I think the leaders who are going to thrive in this new environment are the ones who are going to connect their data with their people and their strategy. So finding a way to wrap that all together.
It's so perfectly put. And it is learning to be visible, building your voice early inside and outside the firm. The future partner is not just going to be a great technician. There are so many great technicians out there, but they're going to communicate, they're going to connect, they're going to be a great brand ambassador. So I repeat that influence is the new equity. It's currency. This profession is changing, but the opportunity to lead through your voice and visibility has never been greater. Chelsea, this has been a brilliant show.
Thank you. And thanks everybody for sending such great questions in. Keep them coming. We want to do another one of these. We love hearing what's on your mind and talking about the topics that you guys want to hear from. Thanks for listening, everybody.